Okay, we are in Daf Chaf Aleph Amid Aleph. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the seventh widest lines. We're discussing the six wives of David. Gemara said he had six wives, and from that we understand the maximum a king can have is 18, because Nasan Navi said you could have had as many as you had, and another time as many as you had. So it was debate if it was 6 plus 6 plus 6, or 6 plus 6 plus 12. Or what did we say? 6 plus... how to get to 48? 6?
6 is 12, 12 and 12 is 24.
Whatever. We had 48 if you're... Oh, the extra vavs. The extra vavs. 6 plus 6 plus 12 plus 12 plus 12 plus 12. Okay, anyway. But the premise that David had six wives, Gemara says, wait a minute. Vaha havoy michal. He had another wife named Michal. We know that was one of the more famous wives that he had. It's not on the list. Must mean he has seven wives. So then our whole number might be off. Morris says no. Amar Rav. Rav says no, she's on the list, but she goes by another name on the original list. Egla, who was one of the six that was listed earlier, is actually Michal. So that's her name. Her name is not only Michal, it's Egla. Ay, v'lama nikra shma Egla. Why did the Navi list her name as Egla? The answer is shechaviva alav ke'egla. She was as beloved to him as a calf. And we'll see that other place in the Torah that a calf is a term of endearment. Okay? So, just like we use, let's say, in Yiddish... you know, we call a person Shepsala. You know, it's like a lamb chick, you know. So this fondness that David had for Michal is also, because if you look carefully, it said before, when it said Egla, it said Eshes David, the wife of David, meant he had the most fondness towards her. So I guess in the biblical times, if you really loved your wife, you called her Kathy. Okay? You know, little Kathy, my dear calf. Alright? And let's just finish up the answer. Vechenu Omer, and similarly it says in the book of Shoftim, when Shimshon had taken a Plishti wife, and then he had a whole question with a riddle. He had a wager. If they couldn't solve his riddle, they weren't able to solve the riddle, so they pressured Shimshon's wife to get the answer from it. Then they gave the answer. So then he said, "Lule chirashtem beglasi, had you not plowed with my calf, again, you wouldn't have found out the riddle." So you see that a woman is called a wet calf. All right, so that's the answer. You had a question?
Yeah, I was just wondering, last week, did we end off with a Tana Didan Mai? There was one line just above.
No, we did that.
We did that?
He doesn't darshan. He compares Kehena Kehena. It's just like the first Kehena was six.
Uh-huh.
The other one is also six.
Okay, fine.
Okay. Now the question says, well, wait a minute. So now that you said that Michal is Egla, right? And in those psukim, it mentioned each wife, the son that she had, right? So if you go back to that pasuk there, it says, which one? The sixth one, right? The sixth one. Let's go back to the sixth one. V'hashishi Yisra'am le'egla. The sixth son was Yisra'am to Egla, the wife of David. So we're now saying that Egla is Michal. Michal had a son named Yisra'am. And that's going to be a problem. Why? Now I got to go back to the place here. Because Gemara asked, comes out, Michal had a son, right? Gemara says, Umi hava l'michal b'nei. But did Michal ever have children? We have another pasuk that says Michal never had children. How are you going to tell me that Michal is Egla, but it clearly says Egla had a son? But we're going to show you in a second that Michal didn't have any children. V'aksiv, it says, Ula Michal Bashal, and to Michal, the daughter of Shaul, Lahoyala Vlad, or Yoled, she did not have any children ad Yomasa until the day of her death. So how could you say that Egla had a child? Now, this was a punishment. When David was bringing in the Holy Ark to Yerushalayim, he was dancing with a tremendous amount of exuberance, and Michal chastised him for it. What are you getting so excited about Yiddishkeit for? It's not to your dignity. You're a king. Whoa, she was punished for that. And the punishment was she wouldn't have children, the Torah says, until the day of her death. She didn't have children. So how can you tell me that she had any kids? So Gemara answers, Amar Rav Chisda, well, what did the Torah say? Ad yomo salohela. She didn't have any kids till the day of her death. But biyomoisa hoyela. But the day of her death, she did have. And indeed, she had a child. She died at childbirth, just like Rachel. So it's possible she had a child, but at death. Still not a good issue. Still a problem. Why is that a problem? Let's see. Michti, let's see. Banim, when it lists the children in that pasuk that we started off with last week, Hecha Kochashiv, where was David chronologically when it listed these sons? If you look carefully at the pasuk, it says Bechevron, when he was in Chevron, when he ruled in Chevron for the 7 years before he came to Yerushalayim, that's when it lists the wives and the sons. So what is it telling me? In Chevron, that's before he came to Yerushalayim. You're going to tell me that Egla is Michal, and she had a son, but this was a son in Chevron, well before Michal dies. Right? Because this whole story with Michal, the whole reason why she got punished happened later, when he's in Yerushalayim. But the pasuk there says that's who wives gave him kids when he was in Chevron. So then it's a problem. V'ilu maseh to Michal, the story of Michal, and the reason why she got punished, Yerushalayim of was Yerushalayim. So that doesn't make sense. Tichsiv, how do we know this? How do we know the story happened then? It says, well, Michal Bashal, Nishkava, Biyarachalon, she's gazing through the window. Vateres HaMelech David, she sees King David, Mefazez Umecharker. He's leaping and dancing lifnei Hashem, before Hashem. Vatives, and she scorned him. So that was afterwards. So what's going on? If you want to say that Michal is Egla, and Egla had a son, and you want to say, even though it says Michal didn't have a son until she died, well, she had this son, but that was not when she died. Amor is going to give an answer. Amor of Yehuda. Yehuda answers, Visema, and some say it was Rav Yosef. The answer is Shekalta Michal Lemitar Pisa. Okay, Michal received her due by becoming barren. Shekalta, she took Michal Lemitar Pisa. She got what was coming to her. In other words, it was that she. So he's saying that Michal couldn't have a child on the day she died. What does that mean? Look at the commentary. That is, the verse that concludes that chapter by saying that Michal had no children until the day she died means to state that this was her punishment for the sin of scorning David and ridiculing him for dancing with all his misdeeds. This is part of the question, rather. I'm sorry. This is the part of the question. So Rabbi Huda explains this part of the question. She got her due, right? So that's what it's saying. She received her due by becoming barren. She called to Michal Amitarfsa. She was complaint, criticizing him, so she got punished. This is all part of the question.
So obviously she never did tshuva. Maybe that would have made a difference.
Maybe. I guess nobody told her she did something wrong.
Yeah.
And no one told her she did something wrong. So she got her due, and she became barren. So that's part of the question. The answer is, Ella Eba, we could answer, Ad Osa Maisa Hoyolo. She had children before the story. Meaning to say, she became barren subsequent to the story. Meaning, in fact, she could have children before, and from that point onward, she couldn't. Mikan ve'elech, and from that time onwards, lo ha'yalo, she didn't have any kids. So that's what it means. After this story, when she insulted David, now she could no longer have kids until the day she died. So that's how we answer the question. Also, you could see also the verse regarding her childless may even be understood to mean that children she had before then also died. Oh. Could be that that son died before him. Either way, that's that. Okay, now the Gemara asks the question, wait a minute, so what are you telling me? He only had six wives? Well, no, he had more wives. Vaksiv, there's a pasuk that also tells us, Vayikach David owed Pilagshim v'noshim Rishalayim. Remember, he had six wives in Hebron. It says he also took concubines and wives in Yerushalayim. So it would come out, wait a minute, what did we say? First opinion says the king has 18 wives, right? How do we say 18 wives? Because he had six. And Nassan said you could have had that amount, plus that amount, and that amount, which 6 plus 6 plus 6 is 18. But wait a minute, he had more than six wives because the pasuk says he took concubines and wives in Yerushalayim. Okay? Now, here's the issue. Look at the order. Look at the commentary. The Gemara's question is based on the order of the verses. The verse that states that David took extra wives precedes the verse in which Nath's son tells David that he would be permitted to add as much again and as much again. In other words, he had six wives in Hebron, chronologically. Then he took more wives and more concubines in Yerushalayim, whatever that number was. And then Nassan said, you could have had as many as you have plus plus. So it's not 6 plus 6 plus 6. It's whatever it was beyond 6 plus plus plus. So therefore, it ain't 18. It's got to be more than that. So the Lord answers, nope. Lemaloe shmona asar. These additional wives indeed filled the quota of 18. So wait, there's a little bit missing over here. The commentary fills in what's missing. Although the verse requiring the additional wives precedes the statement of Nassan in the order of Scripture, but chronologically it refers to marriages that took place after Nassan spoke to David. Thus, additional wives fell within the quota of 18. Okay, so that's the point. Although he did have more, but in the scriptural order, it would seem these wives were taken before he married Nassan, but really it's going out of order, and this was after Nassan rebuked him. Okay, interesting. The commentaries have a discussion whether concubines are included in the 18 wives. Okay, so now the Gemara asks a simple question. It said he took wives and concubines. Gemara wants to know, my nashim umay pilachim. What constitutes a wife and what constitutes a concubine? In other words, what is the difference? Right? Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, he says a couple differences. Number one, nashim biksuva ubikidushim. A wife gets a kesuva and is acquired through a formal kiddushin, the betrothal ceremony. Okay? So that means if the husband dies, first of all, the kesuva means he has financial obligations. If he dies, he also has obligations afterwards financially. And also, the way they are together, they have to have a formal betrothal of giving her a ring, etc., etc. Okay, now they're legally married, and they also require a divorce. That's a regular wife. A regular wife gets a formal marriage ceremony that can only be severed with a divorce. Plus, the husband gives the wife a ksuva, which requires great financial responsibility. While pilakshim, nothing doing. Below ksuva, or below kiddushin. They don't get a ksuva, and they don't get a regular kiddushin. Right? So therefore, you don't need a kiddushin at all. It would seem then that they wouldn't need a divorce at all.
So how do they make this arrangement of pilegesh? You just like walk up to the person and say,
you say, you're going to be my pilegesh. Now, many commentaries, however, including Rashi, in his commentary to Bereishis, seem to have a different reading of the Gemara. It says, pilakshim bikidushin ubelo ksuva. They have a different reading. Pilakshim do get a kiddushin, but not a ksuva. So there's a big discussion how to read this line exactly. So one thing's for sure, a pilegesh does not get a ksuva. The kiddushin is a matter of debate, how you're going to read the text. Okay, now, very interesting next statement. While we're on the fact of David and his wives and his children, Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Arba Meos Yelodim Hayodav, David had 400 sons. Had 400 young men in his service. Okay? Hold on. That doesn't mean it was his sons, though. Look at the commentary. They were not David's children, but children fathered from soldiers of David's army. And what's the main point? We'll see in a minute. From captured Gentile women. In other words, you're going to see that he had in his army 400 men, 4 Yeladim. And where do they all come from? V'chulan b'nei Yafas Tor Hayu. They all came from the Yafas Tor. If you recall, Torah tells us in Parshas Kisetze, when a Jewish man goes out to battle and he finds a pretty woman and he wants to marry her, there's a whole procedure involved in how you can bring her into your home to marry her. And she's called a Yafas Tor. Okay? So these 400 special elite forces that David had, they were from his soldiers, who in the course of their wars had picked up women that were Yafei Toar, and these are the sons that came from that.
So we think all these 400 children came from this proper procedure that was carried out according to the
Yes,
Torah.
Yes, 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 yes. Now, there's a whole discussion. One second, we have to know all this. Yeah, it would be important to know this. So there's a big machlokas, though, in exactly the timing of this. But anyway, we see the Torah does give a certain formula. Remember, the whole idea is we hope the guy at the end of the formula will let her go. But if he wants to, there is a legal way. She ultimately converts. She becomes a Jew, and he could have kids from that. Now, look, it said, based on this statement of the Gemara, some Rishon conclude that the Torah permits a soldier to cohabit with a captive woman when he first encounters her in the war zone. It's a big machlokas when he could have his first act of intimacy with her. Some commentaries say on the battlefield he's permitted one time with her, even without marrying her. Following this initial contact, he may not again engage in intimacy with her unless he converts her and marries her according to the procedure outlined above. Others maintain that even the first contact is forbidden until he marries her. So machlokas. Nevertheless, the knowledge that this woman can soon be permitted to him, if he desires her, allows a soldier to master temptation. Okay, I don't want to get into all hashkafa, why we allow it, this and that, but that's a whole separate issue. According to Rashi's view, the reason a special biblical dispensation is required to permit the captive woman is because the principles of Torah law would not ordinarily regard the conversion of the captive woman as valid, since the circumstance in which she finds herself make it unlikely that her conversion is wholehearted. Okay, etc., etc. Okay. The Rishonim note that dispute between Rashi and Beno Tam is actually debated in the Talmud Yerushalmi between Rav, who permits the first contact immediately, and Rabbi Yochanan, who forbids the first contact until she's been converted. So it's a machlokes if you're allowed to be intimate with this woman or not before she exactly converts. You'll see this will come into play soon. Anyway, so he had 400 young men who were soldiers, of children of his own soldiers who had children through a Yafas Tor. What else do we know about these fellows? Umigadle Belori Soyu, and they had long locks of hair. This was a goyish custom. You know, this whole dreadlocks business, it's a goyish thing going way back to the times of the Bible. Okay? Look at this. It was a pagan custom to allow the hair on the back of the head to grow for an entire year before cutting it. That's called a bloris. The children of these captured women adopted the pagan styles of their mothers. It's ordinarily forbidden for a Jew to grow his hair in the style of pagans. However, these children were not considered Jewish at birth, as we'll see shortly, and David never converted them, but allowed them to remain as gerei toshav. Remember, it's the status of a ger toshav. There are four different statuses. You have a Jew, you have a Goy. Okay, that's pretty clear. We capture Goyim, you can make him an Eved Kanani. You can make him a Canaanite slave, which he gets circumcised and has to keep the seven Noahide laws. But he's still a Goy, 100% Goy. That's an Eved Kanani, a Canaanite slave that you own. Then you have someone who converts according to Jewish law, 100%, is treated just like a Jew. You have another category, this one we're going to talk about now, is a ger toshav. It's a non-Jew who does not want to be a Jew, who is not a slave to a Jew, wants to live in the land of Israel, and we only give him permission to live in the land of Israel if he keeps the seven Noahide laws. So a non-Jew can live in Israel if he keeps the seven Noahide laws, and the Torah tells we have to take care of them if they have problems, They're poor. We have to take care of them. So, you know, you could, you know, could think about, you know, all the Palestinians who live in Israel, or the Arabs who live in Israel, according to Torah law, they'd have to keep the seven Noahide laws. Problem is, many of the Jews themselves don't keep the seven Noahide laws, unfortunately. But anyway, so these 400 soldiers, here's the point. They were children of the wives of the Yafas Torah. We're going to see, and these, they never became Jewish. Because think about it. If, according to the opinion, it says you could be intimate once with the woman on the battlefield, well, then she's for sure a shiksa. Mm-hmm. And even if she converts late, well, we'll see. But anyway, the child would push it be a goy. Okay? But the guy could then take her, and eventually she converts, but the kids are not Jewish. So now they're not Jewish. So, okay, so they like to keep some customs to have long locks. So how can they be in our army? Well, they're going. They're a ger toshev. They accepted the seven Noahide laws. As long as you keep the seven Noahide laws, you want to have dreadlocks, that's okay. It's not a problem. So this was his special fighting unit.
Sounds like all 400 came from the Machlokas.
Well, we'll
see. Says that you don't have to wait.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. But that seems so. The Kulam and all of them, Yoshvin Bekrono Shalzov. All of them sat in carriages of gold, because they were very prominent soldiers. Umahalchim Barasha Geisus, and they rode at the heads of the troops. They were the first responders. And Vehem Hayu Bale Egrov Mishal Bal David. They were the strong men of the house of David. Literally, the house says Bale, masters of fists. They were very strong. So it is what to you. The goyim have a certain value, you know. There's some strong goyim, and let them lead us into battle. Okay, so that's an interesting story over there. And now, while we're talking about a Yafas Torah, we talk about, in fact, that David himself married a Yafas Torah and had very notable children from the Yafas Torah. And that becomes the next story over here. From Yehuda Merav, Tamar, not to be confused with the Tamar in the 38th chapter of the book of Bereishis, who Yehuda had relations with. There was another Tamar in the book of Shmuel, who was Bas Yafas Torah. So she was the daughter of David, who married a Yafas Torah, and that was Ma'acha. Go back on the list above, back on the page when it talks his wives over there. Okay, if you look at the third, if you look at the last, first wide line, it says over there, Vashlishi, and the third one was Avshalom ben Ma'acha. Avshalom, the son of Ma'acha. And Ma'acha was a captive wife. Okay? So now you all say Tamar was also the daughter of a captive wife. Now you're going to see why we know that she had to be the daughter of a captive wife. Shenemar, as it says the following story over here. Okay, it says where Tamar promises her brother Amnon to marry him. Okay, and she says, "Vata, and now daberna, speak al hamelech, to the king, ki lo yimdanimach, for he will not withhold me from you." Mm-hmm. This is the whole story with Amnon and Tamar. We know that unfortunately Amnon had not proper desires towards his half sister Tamar. So there's a whole story that the Gemara is going to tell us about shortly. Okay. Anyway, after that event, Tamar says, well, listen, go speak to your dad and he'll let you marry me. Now the question is, how could they marry each other? They were brother and sister. And if you want to say that Bas Nisuim, that Tamar's mother was fit for marriage to David at the time of Tamar's conception, then Tamar would legally have been a daughter of David and a sister of Amnon. In other words, had Ma'acha been Jewish at the time she conceived Tamar from David, then Tamar would obviously have been the full daughter of David. This would have made her the half-sister of Amnon, since they would have had the same father but different mothers, who thus have been forbidden to marry each other. So what's going on? If you're going to say she was the product of a fit marriage that happened, Achsia, a sister, Mihava Shirley, would be permitted? Would Avshalom have granted to marry a sister? No. Ela what? Shmamina, we see Bas Yafas Tor Haisa. She was the daughter of a Yafastor. She was conceived before her mother completed her conversion to Yiddishkeit. So even though the seed was from David, but she grew up, was developed in the womb of a Shiksa. So she was not legally the daughter of King David or the sister of Amnon. Look at this. The child of a Jewish man by a non-Jewish woman is not Jewish and is therefore not legally recognized by the Torah as the daughter of that man. To make sense of the statement that David would have permitted Tamar to marry her half-brother Amnon, we must assume that her mother, Maacha, was not net Jewish at the time David fathered Tamar. Thus, Tamar was not legally considered David's daughter, and she was therefore permitted, after her conversion to Judaism, to marry her biological brother Amnon. Now, the only way David could have fathered a child from a non-Jewish woman within the bounds of Torah law is to have taken a Yafastar and cohabited with her before her conversion to Judaism. Yehuda therefore concludes that Maacha must indeed have been a beautiful captive who conceived Tamar before converting to Judaism. This presents a problem for the view that we cited above, that a Jewish soldier is not permitted to cohabit even once, that's what you mentioned, Tony, with his female captive, so she has undergone the procedure described in the Torah, which includes conversion. Right? According to this view, David could not have fathered Tamar until after Maacha had undergone conversion, in which case Tamar would have been born Jewish and would have legally have been considered David's daughter. Rashi ever states that though Maacha had already undergone conversion at the time she conceived Tamar from David, her conversion had not yet been wholehearted. For this reason, Tamar was legally classified the daughter of a non-Jewish woman and thus was not legally the daughter of David. She was therefore permitted to marry her half-brother Amnon. Where she converted, and then later said, hey, I really didn't want to do it so much. And then she already had Tamar by then and all that, and then whatever. Minchas Chinuch explains that it's Rashi's opinion that a Jew who takes a beautiful captive may forcibly convert her. Although forcible conversion is not generally recognized in Torah law, the law of the beautiful captive stands as an exception to this rule, and the forcible conversion suffices to permit her Jewish captor to cohabit with her. Nevertheless, so long as she has not fully agreed to the conversion, she is in many respects not regarded as Jewish, and any child born by her before her willing acceptance of Judaism is not considered Jewish. So that's how you have to explain over here that, you know, that David could have forced it. Now you have to understand there's a lot more than, don't misunderstand, it's a good thing Shelley's not here, that David was a very lecherous man. There's all kinds of Kabbalistic notions over here where David probably saw that there's supposed to be some mystical reason why he's supposed to be with these people, etc., etc. So, but be that as it may, so you see now that David must have married a Yafastar because that's the only way that Tamar could have even suggested the idea that she could marry her half-brother Amnon. Now that we're talking about Amnon and Tamar, let's get to the real juicy story. This is a little bit rated X. It says like this. The pasuk says, "Ula Amnon Rea." Amnon had a friend, Ushmo, and the friend's name was Yonadav ben Shima. Yonadav, the son of Shima, and who was Shima? Achi David, the brother of David. So this was a cousin, right? Yonadav ish chacham, and Yonadav was a wise man. Now we're going to see in a minute. Yonadav was the one who gave an advice to Amnon how to lure Tamar to him and subsequently rape her. All right? So this is what the story is, because Amnon really wanted very much to be with Tamar, but Tamar was a modest woman. He won't be able to have a one-night stand with her. So the friend said, I'll give you an advice. He could trick her to be alone with her, and then you'll be able to rape her. Okay? Let's see. So it says that this guy, his friend was a chacham. His friend was a chacham. Amri Yehuda Marav, says, Ish Chacham, he may have been wise, but Larisha, in wicked ways. Usually, if you say Chacham, it's a positive thing. He says, yeah, he was wisely wicked. Why? We'll see what's going on. Vayomer, the friend, says to him, Madu ata kacha, why are you like this? Dal, you know, so impoverished. English says gaunt. Well, she's like very depressed. Ben Melchus, son of the king. I got an idea for you. Vayomer lo Yonav, Yonav says to Amnon, Shechav al mishkavacha, lie on your bed, v'hischol, and feign illness. And then you're going to need to take visitors. And of course, your father will come to see you. You'll say, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then they're going to have, you'll ask if Tamar could come and make a little food for you. And that's what it says. Until the words it says, va'asa sola'ene asabria, and prepare the food in my sight. All right? In brief, Amnon was pretend to be ill, and when David would come to visit him, Amnon would ask David to send Tamar to his residence to prepare food for him. Oh, Nebuch, he's so sick, he's so weak, she'll prepare some food for him, alone in his chambers. Okay, so then what happens? Vatikach es ha-masreis, so Tamar went, her brother, and she took the pan, the masreis, vatitzok, and poured lefanov cakes out before him. Okay, Amar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda says, what happened? She'asa salo mine tigun, she prepared for him many types of fried foods. Okay, now, look at this. Yehuda means to explain by this why David had not suspected something amiss in Amnon's request that Tamar come to prepare personally the food. Had the food been cooked rather than fried, she could have cooked it before. But a fried dish has to be on the premises because fried has to be served fresh or it dries out. So you need fried food. I'll feel better if I eat fried food. So therefore he could do it, and she had made it in front of him. So no one was suspecting anything. And then what happened? Well, when they were alone, the time came, he was able to rape her because no one there to stop her. All right, we'll stop here. The story continues, though. We're going to find right afterwards that after he raped her, thinking, oh, that's amazing, and then she says, okay, well, you know, tell daddy he'll let us get married. Then he hates her and throws her in the garbage, as it were. So that's always be careful about these things.